But here in the house from the Social Security office in the capital city here in Indianapolis is Charo Boy. Charo, welcome.
Thank you, Amos.
Glad to have you here. So what's new with Social Security? Come the first of the year, there was a cost of living increase, so the check's going to go up a little bit.
That is correct. There will be a 1.7 cost of living increase for our beneficiaries.
And this is the first time in a couple of years.
Well, there was a small one last year, uh-huh. and before that, there was not. And so I know our beneficiaries are looking forward to that benefit. And again, that's 62 million beneficiaries that are going to be receiving that increase. And that's going to be your January check. Uh-huh. So that's going to be the check that they're going to receive in January.
So that's the check that is on the way, kind of, sort of.
That'll
be here between Christmas and New Year's.
That is correct.
One of the other major changes that will occur to Social Security, you guys have nothing. It affects you, and it affects the beneficiaries. But you're not in charge of it, and that is how those checks will get to those 60-some-odd million beneficiaries starting in March of this year. This is something the Treasury is doing because the check doesn't come from Social Security. It comes from the United States Treasury. What are they getting ready to do?
They are requiring all beneficiaries that are receiving federal benefits to enroll for direct deposit. Mm. And 8 out of 10 beneficiaries already receive their benefits electronically.
Ah.
And so there's just a small percentage that they're trying to reach out to and encourage to do the direct deposit. Want to make sure that your listeners know the information and where to go. There's an 800 number to reach them, and that's 800-333-1795. If you're online, you can just go to godirect.org.
A lot of it used to be back in the day, to get things done with Social Security, you had to go to a Social Security office, even to start the process of Social Security or Medicare or other things. Now you're putting a lot more things on the internet. People can even now go to the Social Security's website at ssa.gov and get a copy of their statement. In other words, where they stand, a record of their earnings over the years. They can kind of check and see whether there's some earnings that they thought they had counted in the system that aren't. How much of stuff is, and you can apply for benefits now over the web. How much are you moving things to the internet?
We realize that, one, our baby boomers are here, and I'm assuming you may fall in that category.
Yep.
That is an additional 20,000 claims a day for us. And so we are just giving them options in order to receive services from us. So I first want to make sure that your listeners know that we are still here in the community. We have a new office on 56th and Post. We just moved our office on the west side to 71st and 465 in the Intech Boulevard. These offices have a larger space because our waiting areas are becoming more crowded. And so we're still in the community in addition to our office that's downtown.
So you're not only downtown, but you're at 56th and Post Road. Is that the Lawrence Government Center out there?
We're right next to the Culver's Ice Cream across from DFAS.
What a great place for Social Security office next to the Culver's Ice Cream. And then you're out on 71st and...
And 465.
And over by Fox 59.
Yes.
Keep an eye on y'all. Okay. What major change, before we open up the lines, because they're already ready for you, what major changes are there at Social Security? What are the any major things?
Well, one of the major things, which you were just mentioning, which is your online statement, and I want to stress the importance and the value of that statement. We used to mail them to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
We stopped, and we're saving $70 million.
Oh.
We're going to start mailing them to you once you turn age 60. So if you're under age 60, in order to get this important, valuable information for planning, we encourage you to go to our website and to get your online statement. The other big thing is that our office hours have changed. Back in November, we sent out a press release that we were closing our offices to the public a half hour early. So we're closing at 3:30. And the big update is that beginning January 2nd, we'll be closing at noon on Wednesday. So I want your listeners to know that. So if they are coming in, they know when to come in.
When you go back to the importance of looking at your Social Security statement before you get 60, how important is that? Because is that where people find out that they thought a job they had was paying into Social Security, and they get that statement and they find out,
That is correct. That when you're looking at that statement, you're seeing a listing of your earnings that have been taxed for Social Security. You're also getting estimates. They're telling you what your benefit amount would be at 62, at full retirement age, or 70. One of my close girlfriends passed away last week, her services on Thursday. And so I got to mention the survivor benefit. It lets you know that if you pass, what your dependents would be able to receive from Social Security.
Is it also something where, how important is it to check your check stubs to make sure that your employer is taking out Social Security? Because if they cheat in Social Security, that means you're going to get cheated down the road.
That is correct, because where your Social Security benefit is based off of your record of your wages throughout your lifetime. We get a little technical. We're using your highest 35 years. So there's a big myth that we use your last five or your last 10.
Oh, it isn't.
But we look at your highest 35 years throughout your lifetime, and based on that average, we compute your Social Security benefit.
So if you did well in the latter part of your life, you get over. But is it also true that if people are getting caught up in the recession, that affects your average? If you were doing well, then all of a sudden, you get laid off, the company leaves, the jobs go to China or somewhere?
Well, with us looking at 35 years, we're hoping that that average would kind of give some grace in that, instead of doing what a lot of the myth is, which is the last five or last 10.
Is a lot of the calls and the problems Social Security get Social Security disability? And when people are feeling they need to apply for that, what are the important tips from Social Security's point of view if you're applying for disability? Should people understand it's not going to happen overnight?
Not necessarily about happening overnight, because we have 200 conditions. They're called compassionate allowances, that with that diagnosis alone, you're going to be eligible for benefits.
Right.
But I think that what is important for your listeners to know is about telling us the complete story, of giving us the complete information, of telling us who has those medical records. That decision that is made on their claim is based on evidence, and that's based on those medical records. So I think that's the most important thing, is for someone to know to tell us the full story. And I did claims for 5 years, and many times when individuals would be sharing their information with me, I would also ask them if there was any depression going on. Many times, if you're unable to do what you've physically been doing to provide for yourself, it's just natural that depression and other things may come along. So making sure they tell us the complete story.
Don't try to bogart y'all. See, I can be down to earth to folks. Anyway, 239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's name. In order for Social Security to talk to as many as possible, you know, get right to the point, you know, make your case, and we'll try to get to as many as possible. Let me start with Regina. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, I have two questions for you. First one is, how old do you have to be to draw Social Security? And then the second one is, I have an 18-year-old grandson who's receiving survivor benefits. He's still in high school, but they said something about after he will continue to draw a year and 2 months after his 18th birthday. But if he goes to college, will he be able to continue to draw survivor benefits?
Those two great questions. First, on how old, Charo Boyd?
You need, the earliest you can start Social Security retirement benefits is at age 62. Mm-hmm. And that is something I believe is misunderstood in the public, because the public has heard about ages increasing. And what has increased is your full retirement age. That's the age when you would get your full benefit amount. I just want to throw out some year ranges. If you were born between 1943 and 1954, your full retirement age is 66. Mm-hmm. After that, it goes up a couple of months.
Right.
For individuals born after 1960, your full retirement age is 67. So again, the earliest you can start is at age 62. But what I do got to add to that is, if you start benefits before full retirement age, we look at your wages, what you're actually working and earning, and see if you're under our earnings limit. And if you are over that, then it will reduce your benefit.
If you elect to take your benefits at 62, can you still work?
Yes, you are able to still work. And that's where you have an earnings limit come in. And let me give you the new numbers for 2013.
Okay.
In regards to the earnings limit, and I apologize, that number is $15,120, and those are gross wages for the whole year. Mm-hmm. I also just
wait. So if you are at retirement age, whether it's 62 or 66 or whatever, then you're making more than 15 grand. What does that mean?
That means that those wages over that 15 grand are going to reduce your Social Security benefit because you're getting your benefits early. You're saying, I retired early, so I want my Social Security benefits early. And so we're looking at your wages to see if they meet that of the definition that we have for the early retirement.
I see. So what if you decide when you get, you don't want to do it early. You want to wait till the age and then, you know, it's Social Security time comes. Can you still work? What happens if you still work?
At full retirement age, so for those individuals born between 1943 and 54, at their full retirement age, we no longer look at their wages. So they could earn as much as they want and still receive their full Social Security benefit, because once anyone reaches their full retirement age, they are unlimited in their wages. There's one thing I do need to add about when you start benefits early, because there is some grace in that law that we have a monthly earnings limit. And what we do is that those wages that you earn before you tap into your Social Security benefit, they do not count against you, and then you have a monthly limit, which for next year would be the $1,260.
Regina's second point, she's got an 18-year-old that is earning survivor's benefits. First of all, how can someone 18 earn survivor's benefits?
In order for a child to receive benefits, their mother or their father, their parent, would have worked and paid into Social Security. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, they insured themselves. They insured their dependents. And so it sounds like, Regina, your grandson is receiving benefits on that deceased parent's record. And those benefits, they will go up to age 18. And you were told correctly that after age 18, there is some grace there that that benefit will continue until they turn age 19. And there's a couple of months even after that of grace. But we no longer pay benefits in college. Those changes were made way back in the 80s.
In the 80s? Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, that sounds like Reagan in now. All right, Regina, appreciate it. Let me go to Kim at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a quick question. I have a son that was diagnosed with mildly mentally handicapped, mm-hmm. and because I got married and our combined income became too much for him to continue to see his benefits as a minor, we tried to reapply for him once he became 18. And they wouldn't restore his benefit. How will I go once we applied? Then they still denied him. So I was wondering, does he have to go through the whole process in order to get his benefits back?
There's a couple. There's a couple of things I want to explain. I first want to explain about the benefit that he was receiving. At Social Security, there's two programs we administer. One, Social Security, you have retirement, survivor, and disability. That's from the program that individuals have worked and paid into, the entitlement program. Then we also have a program called Supplemental Security Income, SSI, which is our federal welfare, our needs-based program. So for a child to be receiving benefits, if their parent is not receiving, so they're not receiving under the Social Security portion, then they would be receiving the SSI. So in your scenario, it sounds like you're talking about an SSI benefit. And so with the SSI benefit, because it's not entitlement, totally different program, and it is a needs-based program, therefore your income would affect that benefit. And so then moving forward to your question is, at age 18, you did what I would encourage you to do, which is to have him reapply. And so in that new application, there's not a restoration of the past benefits, but it would be to see if he meets the adult criteria. And if you, if that claim has been denied, I encourage you to file an appeal. If you're outside of your appeal period, I encourage you to file a new claim and to follow that claim through the appeal.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Appreciate it. Back to the phones. And Bobby, hi there.
Hey, how you doing, Amy?
Fine.
Quick question, two of them real quick. My son, I'm a single dad. And his mom played and got SSI. So she never paid child support. He's 10 now, and he's diagnosed with ADHD. So how does that work with child support and her not paying and still getting the benefits? And individually, can he get SSI because he's diagnosed with ADHD? How does that work?
The child support was to be paid by who?
By her.
By her.
But she gets the SSI check, so the prosecutor said that's all the income she got. She don't have to pay nothing, so she gets little waitress's jobs, little tips, and, you know, and that's just that. I mean, as a tad, I guess.
Wait a minute. If she's getting waitress's jobs and stuff off books, that means she's not getting, you know, taxes taken out?
Well, she, you know, the waitress jobs works like this. They get paid $2 an hour. And they work on the tips. So if you make $100 a day in tips, you get to take that home with you.
You still,
and child support comes out at $2 an hour.
Wait a minute. Hold on a minute. if she's working at those jobs, even with tips, there's Social Security kicking in there somewhere. She's paying the Social Security tax. If she's paying the Social Security tax, Uncle can find her.
Well, she's doing it. She's doing it, and her son, which is my son, we've been able to get by last 10 years, and we still fighting. But I mean, the extra income would definitely help. So how do you know, as far as the child support go, how does that work? What's that? How does that work?
On the child support, you gotta go to the child support office.
Okay, I've been there, and their response to me was, she gets SSI, that's all the money she get. We can't take anything out.
Well, no,
I know guys that pay child support out of their SSI. They take it.
No. Charo is saying you can't take child support out of SSI. Is that correct?
That is correct. SSI, again, is a very, very limited income, a needs-based income. The most it pays this year is $698. The most it pays next year is $710. With SSI, is not garnished for child support. So what you have heard that's garnished for child support is Social Security. That's the program that you've worked and paid into. And then also with Social Security, if your child's mother had worked enough, then if she would have qualified for Social Security disability, then there would be this insurance benefit for the child. But sounds like that was not her case.
But Bobby, if she is working a job and she's using her Social Security number as part of working the job, Uncle and the child support division should be able to find a record of that and
here's the deal. She does that, and let's say I get a check once a week for $8.
Okay, well then at least
3 weeks I might get another check for $6.
Okay, then that means they're doing their job and they're getting what they can get.
Yeah, well, I guess you could say that, yeah.
Okay, they're getting – all right, I just want to make sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to do. Anyway, I appreciate the call. Thank you. 239-1310, 239-1310's Afternoons Davis with the folks from Social Security. Let me go to Tatum. Hi there.
Tatum. Hi, how you doing?
I'm fine. What's up?
Good. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter's father, he's on Social Security. He has a disability, and his son is also receiving drawing benefits from him. His son is 26, and our child together is almost 5. So they said the reason why he's able to draw benefits, his son, which is 26, is because he became disabled before he was 19. However, he is still able to draw benefits from him. How is that possible?
Ooh, that's a good one.
When you work and you pay into Social Security, you first insure yourself and then you insure your dependents. For his son who became disabled at age 19, there's a provision in the law that allows a child to receive benefits on their parents' record if they became disabled and unable to work before age 22. And so that law was established because that child would not have had the opportunity to insure themselves under the Social Security program. So therefore, they're still dependent upon that parent. When you work and that the amount that you're eligible for, so again, encouraging everyone to go and get their online Social Security statement. And not only does it tell you what you would receive or what your dependents would receive, but it also lets you know that there's a family max. There is a maximum amount of benefits that's able to be paid out on that record. So I'm assuming what's going on in that situation is, let's say if there was $1,000 left over, we're paying each child $500. So it's not that only one child can receive. We're going to divide up what is left on that insurance benefit among those dependents.
Tatum, are you asking whether the daughter is eligible for benefits?
Well, I know my daughter is eligible because she's receiving it.
Okay.
However, this gentleman does work. He has children of his own, and so they're splitting a pretty large benefit because at first it was three children that were splitting it, his two other children and our daughter. But now it's just our daughter and his son, which is older. But since he's become older, I mean, he does work. He has children of his own, and he does work on the side. So I was just wondering, how was that possible? You know, and I understand what you're saying according to the law and, you know, what Social Security sets out, but I was wondering how that was still possible for him to receive benefits, and if there is a cutoff at some point
for the 26-year-old.
For the 26-year-old,
it sounds like the 26-year-old may be on regular SSI.
If the 26-year-old, when you ask about that cutoff, if the 26-year-old works enough what we call substantial work, then he will become insured on his own record. Also, if his wages are significant, because there are a limit to the amount that you are able to work and earn when you're receiving the disability benefit as well, then that's going to pull him into a queue where we're going to reevaluate him. We're going to see, you know, what's going on there, and whether or not to take him off of benefits, because as you know, it can be challenging to become eligible for Social Security disability benefits. And so, you know, he's meeting a criteria to be eligible. And we do have incentives. We have some great incentives to encourage and allow individuals to go back to work, to try to go to work without immediately taking their benefits. You probably have heard of Ticket to Work and things like that. The one thing that I'd like to share with you is you might find out what your child's benefit would be if he was not on the record. And you might be surprised. You might find out that since there's just the two children, that you're getting actually the amount that you would receive whether or not he was on. So maybe that, you know, could maybe provide some comfort there.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. It's got an email from a retired federal government worker. She says, I have paid into Social Security prior to my government career and now after. But because of the law, I won't receive any benefits because of my high salary. What happens to that money that thousands of government workers pay in and never receive benefits? Here, this woman worked for our government. What's the deal?
Well, what she's referring to is a windfall elimination provision. And so for all of you online, you can just go to our website, Google windfall elimination provision, or go under our forms and publication. There is an offset for individuals who also work and pay into Social Security and become insured for Social Security and are receiving a non-covered pension. So let me explain what a non-covered pension is. Non-covered means that when they worked for that employer, they did not pay into Social Security. Why is this important to Social Security? Because when I talked about how we compute your benefit amount and we use your highest 35 years, in that formula, there is a social goal that we pay a lower wage earner a higher replacement rate. And so for my uncle who retired from the post office, he appears to be a lower wage earner on his Social Security statement because it just has his part-time wages. And so he would be getting a higher Social Security benefit, a higher replacement rate, if that offset was not put in there to actually show those higher wages that he had.
239-1310, 239-1310. That's afternoon's name. Is back to the phones in Marie. Hi there.
Hi, Amos, and hi to your guests. I wanted to know what's the amount, the limit that you can make annually, monthly, if you're on disability Social Security?
Great question.
If you're receiving Social Security disability, the term that you hear us use, we call it substantial gainful activity. And that limit, if you're not blind, for 2013 is $1,040 a month. If you're blind, that limit is $1,740. What I want to also just explain is that if you're already receiving benefits and you've been receiving benefits for a year, then we do have many incentives and many programs to help you to try to go back to work. And there's support within that. And again, our Ticket to Work program. So just know that if you're receiving benefits, you've been on benefits for more than a year, going over that $1,040 is not going to take you immediately off of benefits.
239-1310, 239-1310's afternoon's name is with the folks from Social Security are here in the house. Back to the phones and Erica. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
How you doing? I was calling. I had two questions concerning the Social Security benefits. I had a concern. I was kind of curious. A friend had asked me if I knew anything about it. She has a boyfriend that is 18. He was staying with his mom. She receives, I'm assuming, supplemental benefits. Isn't that where the parent receives the benefits for the kids?
The SSI would be that the child is disabled and has limited income and resources.
He's mentally disabled.
Okay.
And she receives it, but he no longer stays in the house. Right now, he's incarcerated. Now, are you supposed to report that once they're incarcerated?
Yes, absolutely.
Are you able to still receive those benefits if they're incarcerated?
No, he would not be. Well, one, I want to make sure that I explain that there are some things are more in detail. So in that, let me let the people who are properly trained to respond to that. So what you need to do is to call our 800 number, 1-800-772-1213, and to be able to report that change in his living arrangement. And then they would be able to, one, make the note on the record and then be able to advise on whether or not benefits would continue, because I don't want to go from my gut and say that those benefits would immediately stop, because I'm not sure if it's at the point of conviction, not just the incarceration.
The same person I'm talking about, prior to him getting locked up, he no longer lives in his mom's household, and he stays with my friend, which is his girlfriend, and she's 20. She doesn't know much, so she asked me for advice, but is there any way, since he's age 18, I mean, where he's able to go into the Social Security office with her and say, hey, I no longer live with my mom, because my son received developmental disability, and I know that if they're no longer in the home, you have to report that. So whoever they're in the home with, is there any way to get it switched over due to the fact that he's 18?
Wait a minute. I'm confused. Is the individual you're talking about, who's the one that's incarcerated? That's where I'm a little bit confused.
Okay. The person I'm talking about is incarcerated. But I had a question, because they're getting out in February, and my friend, she wanted to know, once he gets out, he stays with her. He lived with her, no longer his mom, but his mom still receives the benefits for him. Is there any way to get that switched
Who
over?
Was the, wait, is this person under 18?
No, they're 18.
Okay. And when before he was incarcerated, who was the check made out to?
To his mom, his mother, but he was no longer in her household, but she never reported it.
Wait a minute, hold it. Before he was incarcerated, was he 18?
Yes.
All right, and my question is, Charo, if somebody is getting SSI and they're under 18, when they become 18, does the check continue to go to the parent, or does the check go to the beneficiary as the beneficiary at 18?
What we're going to do at 18 with the SSI benefit, we're actually going to do a redetermination. So at age 18, we would stop that benefit and do a redetermination to see if he meets the criteria under the adult. But that check, to go more to your question, that if mom is the payee, it's mom's responsibility to let us know in regards to those changes. But we would not do it automatically. We, of course, have to be notified.
So now here's the question. This gentleman comes out of being incarcerated. When he comes out of being incarcerated, how old is he?
He just turned 18. So what I'm saying is, when he comes out, is he old enough, as long as he has, due to the fact that he's mentally disabled, if he has someone else come in that he lives with to be switched over to the payee, can he do that, or does his mom have to do that?
Can come into the office. So one, we would definitely encourage him to come into the office and let us know what's going on. Most likely what he's going to find out is, again, that we are redetermining to see if he is meeting the criteria as an adult.
So he would be coming in to redetermine, reapply, in essence.
That is correct.
So now here's the other problem. If mom, during his incarceration, has been cashing the checks while he's been incarcerated, she could theoretically have a liability of paying uncle back.
That is correct, because that would have been mom's responsibility to let us know.
So mom should have told everybody when he got incarcerated for something.
That's
her responsibility. If she didn't do that, then you in trouble with uncle, and uncle don't play. 239-13, y'all know what I'm talking about. 239-1310, 239-1310 is after news and Amos. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more on my birthday in the second hour. Oh, my goodness gracious. A bunch of stuff, including first part of our exit interview with Governor Mitch Daniels. It's after news with Amos after these. 239-1310, 239-1310, it's after news with Amos. Back to the phones. And Tina, hi there.
Good afternoon, Amos.
Good afternoon.
Happy birthday to you. Hello.
Well, thank you. You're welcome.
Yeah, okay. My question is to the Social Security lady, is that on the increase that we just got on our SSI checks, I was wondering who determined the amount and how do they go about it, determine which individual get this amount or that amount? Because I know, you know, some people get more than the others, and I was wondering how do they do that? How do they determine that?
Thank you
Great
for the
question.
Thank you for that question. The cost of living adjustment was designed to ensure the purchasing power of Social Security and SSI beneficiaries. And how it's calculated is based on, they call it the CPI, it's the Consumer Price Index. And that's basically like for what the what things cost. And so that can be debatable, but that can be debatable among individuals. But and basically, it's looking to see what things cost, and based on that percentage. And so it always comes out in that report in October. By law, the Social Security benefit amount is just linked to that. So last year, you can see there was an increase of the cost of living benefit of 3.6%. And then those years prior, there was not an increase because, according to the CPI, things had not increased in their costs since the 2008. So again, it's all tied into the Consumer Price Index, and all of that is under the Bureau of Labor and Statistics Department.
Okay.
No one gets the exact amount. The government doesn't give anyone the exact amount. I mean, you know, they don't determine that everyone gets like some people get maybe $10 increase or $38 increase, $50 increase. You know, I was just wondering how does that come about?
But it's a percentage of what your base amount is, correct? So it's a flat percentage, right?
That's correct.
So it depends on your base amounts. If your base amount is $100, you get 1 point, whatever the percent is, more than the $100. If your base amount is $200, you get 1% of the $200. You follow me? So it depends you'd want a flat amount?
No, I just wanted to know, you know, why would some get more than the others? You know, I thought the government, because at one time the government had said they were going to get like a $250 increase, which that never came about. Everyone was supposed, from what I understood, everyone was supposed to have been getting that increase of $250.
Oh, no, that's something else from back in the day. Charo, what was that?
That was a one-time payment under the Recovery Act.
Stimulus.
That was under the stimulus, and that all beneficiaries did receive that $250 payment. So if you did not receive that, that was quite some time ago. Was that 2009? My memory is a little short in that, but you can reach out to us. But that was a one-time payment under the stimulus, under the Recovery Act.
Okay, then.
All right, appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Let me go to another Bobby at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, happy birthday, and hi to your guests. My question is, I was married for 20 years. My wife passed. Am I at a certain age entitled to get her Social Security? And if I am, does it stop if I get remarried?
Ah, great question.
Thank you for that question, Bobby. So we're talking about survivor benefits. And so the first thing I want to explain is that if you are married to someone and they pass away, that you only had to be married for 1 year. So there's a big myth that there's this 10-year rule, and that 10-year rule is in regards to our divorce spouse benefits. So if you're married for someone for 10 years and then you divorce, then you can be eligible for benefits on their record. So your question is that you guys were married for 20 years and she passed away. Can you be eligible for benefits on her record? The answer is yes. At what age? As early as age 60. At age 60 is when you can start survivor benefits. Again, you're starting it early before that full retirement age. So we're going to reduce it because you're getting that benefit early, and we're going to look at your wages. The other part of your question was if you remarry. If you remarry before age 60, then you would be on your new spouse's Social Security benefit or policy. If you remarry after age 60, then that marriage is protected, and so you would still be able to receive the survivor benefit on your deceased wife, even though you're remarried, and that's because that remarriage occurred after age 60. And I think that's important for many of our seniors to know, because it is a myth that if you remarry that you're automatically stop benefits, and that's not the case. A remarriage after age 60 would not stop the survivor benefit.
Okay, thank you.
All right, appreciate it. Back to the phones, and Linda, hi there.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have a question for the Social Security lady.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm on I'm on disability, mm-hmm. Social Security, and I'm 62 years old. Why am I not eligible for? Is it Medicare or Medicaid?
Medicare.
Medicare.
That's a good question. Medicaid is run by the state through FSSA. and you could be eligible for Medicaid, but you'd have to call the FSSA office. That's not Social Security. That's Medicaid is a state thing. And she's going to give you the answer on Medicare.
Yes, with the Medicare, after you've been on Social Security disability benefits for 2 years, then you would be eligible for the Medicare. And what Amos was sharing about Medicaid, if you're dual eligible, if you're eligible for Medicaid and Medicare, then the Medicaid can assist or may be able to assist with that Medicare premium. Right now, the Medicare premium is $99.90 next year, and it's a monthly premium that would come out of your Social Security check is $104.90. So it would be important to, as Amos shared, to apply for the Medicaid.
So Linda, how long you been on disability?
Since I just got my first disability check October.
Okay.
October of this year.
All right. So to do the Medicare, you got to wait almost 2 years. But
2 years.
Yeah, 2 years. But you can call FSSA.
Uh-huh.
All they can do is tell you no.
Is that located up there in the on Meridian?
You know they'd have moved all the offices around. I know they got one office over by Glendale on Kessler Boulevard, just east of Keystone.
Uh-huh.
That's where one office is. But if you call the helpline at 211. They can tell you where the FSSA office is nearest you, okay?
All right. Well,
all right.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Amos, one thing I just want to share with your listeners is that I get to do education and outreach, and so I have a free Social Security workshop coming up Wednesday, January the 9th, and it's over at the Bonner Center. It's from 3 p.m. to 4:30, and so you can come out, and so if you don't get to get your question in today, you can come out. I'll be there explaining all about retirement, survivor, spouse, disability, and Medicare benefits. Again, that's going to be Wednesday, January the 9th at the Bonner Center, 3 p.m. to 4:30. You can call the Bonner Center to RSVP at 633-8210.
239-1310. 239-1310 is after news. Amos, back to the phones. And Bill, hi there.
Yeah, hi, Amos.
Hi.
Some of your listeners like other people to, instead of them calling, they like a caller for them. But I have a comment. My uncle, 88 years old, he was on Social Security and Medicare, and I had to take him to Wishart to apply for Wishart Advantage, and they required him to apply for Medicaid also. And we went to over on Meridian. So you can,
I guess
you can be eligible for both of them. But speaking of that, he doesn't have a checking account, a banking account, and so the physical cliff that's coming up in March the 1st of next year, the electronic transfer for seniors. I went on the internet, and I have two questions for two different individuals. Social Security has seems like they've set it up with Chase Bank and Fifth Third Bank, and you know I went through, scrolled through, and those were the only ones up. Well, my uncle is a step 2 feet from PNC, and I think it's Regions. So, are those? First question is, are those the only participants in the program that you have specially set up with? You want the other one?
Let me start with that one first, because I think there's a point in which Social Security can do that. Are you stuck with the banks that Treasury is going to be working with, or can you set this up at any bank?
You can have your check directly deposited with any bank.
No, yeah, we know that, but I mean, for the program, it seemed like that Social Security had set up a specific program with these two banks. Is that correct?
It may be the Treasury Department. And I'm looking at the Social Security's website, and it basically says,
if you go to Indianapolis and request the ones in Indianapolis, they only came up with 20. First 25 were Chase, first 25 were Fifth Third, and the second 25 were Chase.
And this was off the Social Security website?
Yes.
Okay, because I'm trying to look and see if I can find.
While you're doing that, I'll go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead and give me the second question.
Another question. I've got a neighbor that's 62 years old and works full time, and I looked at her earnings, and the way I understand it, $14,000 on an annual basis is the maximum you can do both, and she'll be old past that, and she didn't notify Social Security that where she was. So what happens in a case like that? And also, the place that she's employed at, they have direct deposit, and they have set it up with certain CVS and Marathon and BPs where she takes the card and goes in there and withdraw her funds. Now, can a person use that account for the direct deposit of the Social Security check also?
What I can talk about is in regards to your neighbor that is working. The limit for 2012 is the $14,640. So you shared that she's going to go over that. What does she need to do? She needs to give us a call, 1-800-772-1213. We can be able to talk with her and see what is actually going on, seeing how much her wages are going to be, and then explain to her options. One thing I just wanted to share that if for some reason if she did not, then what happens is we will get that record of wages when the IRS reports that to us, and then we'll send her a notice. And the notice, it does have some strong language. It explains you've been overpaid, and this is what the next steps are. So I just want her to contact us beforehand. But most importantly, I want you to share with her that we understand.
Is there
and
a penalty
that,
for that?
And that's where I was going, is that we understand. And so there's not a penalty. There's not an interest. But she will be responsible for paying back that money. And we'll sit down and work with her and see how much, you know, she's able to pay it all back, or if according to her bills and things like that, if there's a certain portion that can be withheld from her check. But again, the most important thing is just to start with communication. And please let her know that, you know, there's no need for her to be fearful in contacting us. It's not going to... you know, we're not going to stop her benefit. But if there's no contact and then we get that information later, then, you know, the system is just going to automatically do what it's designed to do. And it's going to withhold whatever amount that she should not have received. And it's going to withhold it all up front in the beginning. So, again, I'm sharing to please have her to go ahead and reach out to us immediately.
Okay.
And Bill, I was looking on the Social Security's website, and in their frequently asked questions, they're clearly stating that the benefits can be deposited into any account at any bank or credit union. And they've also got this may be the little card they got. If you want the debit card, that may be certain banks. But, you know, Charles and I have talked about putting an arm on the Treasury Department after the first of the year when we get to this cliff, because I am concerned about the transition, even though maybe most people are getting their Social Security stuff direct deposited. We know the ones that aren't, that's the hardest ones to reach, and it probably is disproportionate into our community. So we're going to be leaning, you know, on them and working with Senator Donnelly's office, yeah, love saying that, and Congressman Carson's office to make Treasury show up here and not just, you know, ignore our community. And because I really have not gotten – I get more from Social Security about this than I get from the Treasury, but that's something that is on our radar screen. I appreciate it. 239.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. 239-1310. Back to the phones. And Danny, hi there.
Hey, how you doing, Amos?
I'm fine, sir.
All right. I'll be as quick as possible as I can.
Okay.
I'm a 37-year-old male. And I've been in full-time ministry for about 6 or 7 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And basically I'm asking, like, what advice or what can I do differently for a person like me that is in the full-time ministry that hasn't worked underneath my Social Security number for the last 6 or 7 years? I have worked, but I've worked through the ministry that I've been helping run. And it's a non-for-profit organization. And like I said, I've been helping run this ministry for about 6 or 7 years. So basically what I'm asking, will that hurt me in the long run?
It is a personal choice for you, and it's a choice of whether or not you want to be insured under Social Security. If you were And also how you're classifying yourself. As a self-employed person, if you pay self-employment taxes, then that is going into Social Security. You're going to pay a portion of Social Security taxes on your net. And so based on that net, that's how you're becoming insured for Social Security. And then that would be how we would determine how much you would be eligible for if you became disabled, if you retired, or if you passed away, what your dependents would receive. So again, it's a choice to where if you were paying in, then you are insured for the benefit.
Okay. Well, the situation is that not actually paying in right now. So what happens is that the facility that I have run, it like I said, it's a non-profit organization, and we do work, but they have a subcontractor's license. So the men and women here that helps run the ministry, as well as the men and women that stays here to be able to help support the ministry and keep the ministry running, we go out and work through the subcontractor's license that they have. So all of the income and all the money that comes in is what keeps the ministry running. Don't get me wrong, all my needs are met. So I'm blessed there. But basically what I'm just looking at that could it come back and hurt me in the long run
when you file taxes, are you paying the self-employment tax?
Yes.
When he looks, if he's paying self-employment tax, when he looks at his Social Security benefit statement, should that income be showing up?
That is absolutely correct. So you want to go and get your statement, socialsecurity.gov, and you would see that.
Okay.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you so very much. You guys have a blessed day.
I appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310's afternoon's name is We'll Take a Break. We'll be back with the folks from Social Security, and an AARP is here trying to tempt me. Chris, they're trying to tempt me because it's my birthday. And they heard I'm getting older. Anyway, they're here in our second hour. A bunch of stuff, including our interview with the governor, part one of a three-part interview, all that and more. It's Afternoons with Amos on a very busy Tuesday. Back to the phones, and Ann, hi there.
Yes, I was calling. I heard Amos tell a lady that she had to be on disability for 2 years before receiving Medicaid, and I've been on it disabled since 99, and I've never got Medicare.
How old are you?
50.
And you've been on Social Security disability since what year?
1999.
Can she, Charles Boyd, apply for Medicare?
What's going to happen is I would want to know if you're getting SSI or SSDI. Because, see, under SSI, there's no health insurance. There's no Medicare with the SSI. But if you're getting Social Security disability, then after you're receiving benefits for, again, those 24 months, those 2 years, we automatically enroll you into Medicare. You get your Medicare card, and you only have the option to refuse the Part B or not. So you definitely, if you're getting the SSDI, you want to give us a call at that 800 number, 800-772-1213, so you can see when did you refuse that Part B and what your options are. One of the previous callers, he shared about that individuals might, you know, he shared that they went and applied for the Wishart Advantage, and sometimes individuals may do that and refuse the Medicare Part B because of the cost for the Medicare Part B.
I was never offered it, ma'am.
Are you on SSDI?
Yes, I am. I'm on Social Security SSI Disability.
Yeah. SSI is the Supplemental Security Income, and that's the needs-based program, and there is no health insurance with that. So if you're getting your check on, like, the first or the third, you're getting SSI, and there is not health insurance, there's not Medicare eligible. But again, just so that you can make sure, so that you can know for sure which program you're receiving, I encourage you to call our 800 number so we can explain to you this is the benefit you're receiving. And if you are getting that, if you do receive SSDI, we would be able to explain to you the entitlement for the Medicare, et cetera.
So call the 1-800-7722?
772-1213.
Okay, because I've called them and they weren't able to help me. And see, I'm a diabetic too, ma'am, and it's really expensive. And I know other people that are getting Medicare.
All right, Anna, I tell you what, I want you to hold on. I want you to give your name and a number where you can be reached during the day to Chris, the gentleman that you call when you call me. Mm-hmm. And the Social Security folks will follow up with you, okay?
All right.
232, that'll allow me to talk to Brenda right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Happy birthday, Amos.
Thank you.
This is to Ms. Charlotte, is it?
Yes.
Yes, Ms. Charlotte, I have a question for you. I don't know if you covered this already. My concern is regarding children and how the schools are disproportionately labeling children with mental illnesses and encouraging parents to sign up for Social Security. And so that's a financial incentive for parents to do this. So my question is to met out fraud, and also we're talking about children who may be given these psychotropic drugs in order to get the benefits, who are being prescribed these medications because of what a school says. What do you know about this? Because if children who don't need these drugs are getting these drugs because the school can get a kickback and so can't the parent, then this is dangerous. And we got more children in our school systems being labeled as having ADHD and all these other mental illnesses just through our school system alone, and it's fraud. So how do you speak on this issue?
Brenda, I hear your concern, and I hear your heart for the children. And what I can share is, you know, the whole diagnosis and those, you know, what the school is doing. I know that you understand that that is something that we at Social Security absolutely have no involvement or control over. We've established our program to be able to assist those children who are disabled and need assistance that's what our program is designed for. So, right. I mean, I hear your heart and I hear your concern, but that is something that I actually, you know, have no power or control over. Amos, do you want to
jump
in on that?
Is there an independent, you know, if somebody applies for that and says, okay, my kid is on ADHD and the school said, oh, to call you all, I'm eligible for benefits. Is there an, do you all independently verify that? And do you verify that through the school or through the child's physician?
We're going to get medical records. Again, when I was talking about our decision-making process, it's all based on evidence. So we're going to acquire the evidence, if it's the medical records from that physician, if it's the IEP, the different things. We're going to gather the evidence to support that and to help us to decide if this child is meeting the criteria for our program.
In terms of trying to, you know, make sure that, you know, people aren't running a scam, people aren't running fraud, that's an important part of Social Security. If all of a sudden you get a rash of applications from a specific school or school district, or people coming in and said, the school suggested I do this, would that raise a red flag?
I can only imagine that it would.
Mm-hmm. And that would, or somebody could raise a flag with the Inspector General's office in the Social Security Administration?
That is correct. And you can go to our website, socialsecurity.gov, and right in the center under useful links, there's a link for you to be able to report fraud.
There's a fraud link in the front.
Right under.
All right, she's getting ready to show me where. Ooh, right in the center under useful links, report fraud or ID theft. Dun 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 dun. Oh, I got a sister telling you report fraud. Got a video. Nice little lady here telling you we ain't tolerating no fraud. 239. I appreciate that. 239-1310. 239-1310's afternoon's name is AARP is in here trying to twist my arm. Hi, AARP. You are.
Hello, Amos. I'm Sarah Waddle.
Uh-huh.
And I'm an Associate State Director for Advocacy with our Indiana State Office. I focus on our federal advocacy issues.
And from AARP's point of view, besides making sure that Social Security and Medicare stays intact, because already the Republicans are waffling and they're trying to get the president to cave and the fiscal cliff is getting close. This is like one of those old soap operas back in the day, the cliffhanger. You know, is James Bond going to fall over the cliff and get hurt and what have you? How concerned, you know, is AARP to make sure that we keep the things that Charo is talking about intact?
Yeah, AARP is very concerned because we know that Social Security and Medicare, they're just not line items in a budget. They're lifelines for people. And I think related to this fiscal cliff conversation, these negotiations that have been going on, AARP is paying specific attention to the conversations that are going around changing the COLA, the cost of living adjustment, mm-hmm. Changing that. And then also there's some discussion about increasing Medicare eligibility age to 67. from 65. So those are two things that AARP is very, very concerned about. We're working hard to make sure our lawmakers and the White House hear that these are not just line items in a budget. They're not just numbers. These are programs that need to be talked about in a broader conversation so that we can protect and strengthen the programs for today's beneficiaries and future generations.
In this conversation that we've had with listeners with Social Security, if people were just tuning in expecting to hear that it was all discussions about senior citizens, that's not it. We're talking a lot about young people. We're talking a lot about survivors' benefits. Is it, from AARP's point of view, part of the education, making sure the American people understand that Social Security doesn't just touch our senior citizens or those about to be seniors?
That's right. I think the AARP looks at these programs as strengthening them for current beneficiaries, but we also have to look down the road. Folks depend on these if they're disabled. They depend on them for their children and their grandchildren. So these are programs that span the ages, and AARP works to make sure that they're there for everyone.
There was an article in the New York Times that talked about a neighborhood in Appalachia. I thought it was interesting that they picked a white rural community to talk about, where young people were encouraged not to study, young people were encouraged not to do well in school so that they could go and claim that they're illiterate, and if you're illiterate, you're disabled, and then you can get a government check. That sounds like fraud to me. So how important is it to make sure that these programs stay not only intact, but with integrity? So if people are trying to rip the system off, they need to be dealt with, and the people who are deserving of need receive it.
Yeah, and I think AARP definitely, I understand what you're saying when you say that, because, when you look at Medicare, for instance, the waste, fraud, and abuse within Medicare, and then you look at the rising health care costs, mm-hmm. and you have to attribute some of that rising health care costs to the waste, fraud, and abuse that's going on. So maybe we can control some of those costs if we can curb some of that waste, fraud, and abuse.
Let me go through the people that are waiting patiently. Let me go real quick. Let me go to Pat. Hi, Pat.
Yes, I have a question. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have a question for your guest from the Social Security office.
Yeah.
How much do you have to pay into Social Security to receive, just in case you do become disabled or deceased, to be able to receive those benefits for you or your spouse or so to receive those benefits?
Great question. How much do you have to be, into Social Security to qualify for any of the programs before you become 62 or 65, 66 or 67?
We use a system called quarters of coverage. So as you work and your wages are taxed for Social Security, you earn a credit or a quarter of coverage. That amount for 2013 is each $1,160. So if you did roughly $6,000, you're going to get all four credits for the year. And then to qualify for Social Security retirement benefits, you're needing basically those 40 credits, those 10 years of work. For the Social Security Disability Program, there's a few more details because you have to have a current work status, be currently insured, and that's 5 out of the last 10 years working and paying into Social Security. More details of that are definitely on our website, socialsecurity.gov, and also pull up the publication Disability, because our younger workers need less time paid into Social Security to qualify for the disability benefits, and so those details are there.
All right, let me go back to the phones real quick. And Kathy, hi there.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
Fine.
Good afternoon to you and your guests. I just had a quick question about the survivor benefits. The cutoff age for survivor benefits for a child that a parent is deceased, is that the age of 18?
Actually, we will pay a child past age 18 if they're still a full-time student in high school. Okay. We'll pay them, I believe it's 19 and 2 months. So there's some grace in that, especially understanding that sometimes our children start school later.
Okay. Okay. So they're at the age of 18, if they're still in school, they'll get paid because I have known someone that will come out of school in June. So will she still get a survivor's check?
I think it's up until age 19 and 2 months.
Okay.
But to add to that, graduating from high school. So let's say if she started school early, mm-hmm. and she graduates from high school at age 17 and a half, then that benefit is going to end. It's basically age 18 or the 19 with grace, or when they graduate from high school. And again, those changes were made.
How
back
old
in
are
the
they
80s.
Now?
18.
They're 18 now. Okay, and when will they become 19?
August of next year.
August of next year. Yeah, it'll run out just about that. It'll probably in October.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ramona is our last caller with the folks from Social Security and AARP. Hi there.
Hi there, everyone. How are you doing?
We're fine.
Good. Okay. My question is, say you go on Social Security disability at about 55 or 56 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really, you know, too young for regular Social Security. So I think you... Do you get a regular Social Security when you're about 66, somewhere in there, 65 or 66? Or is it always considered disability?
Thank you so much for that question. When you receive Social Security disability benefits, the benefit amount that you're receiving is what you would have received at your full retirement age. And so what happens is your benefit amount just stays the same. So you don't see a change in your benefit amount unless you're getting those increases, cost of living increase, or if you do, let's say, after full retirement age, work and increase your wages. But you're receiving the same benefit amount. And what we do is just in our system, when you reach full retirement age, we change you from the disability trust fund to the retirement trust fund. But again, you don't see a difference in your benefit amount because you are receiving the highest benefit eligible.
Quick question.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Now, say you've turned 70. You're now 70 years old, and you kind of go to the casinos and you like to gamble a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you win $1 million. Now, do they stop that check and make you use that money that they've been giving you? And once you use it up, you can get back on Social Security. How does that work?
That's a great question. You think it positive, girl.
Well, I think the harder challenge is going to be all the friends that you're going to acquire, but with Social Security, winning the lottery or winning at the casino is not going to affect your Social Security benefit. Again, Social Security, you've worked and paid into it. You're entitled. And so once you reach that full retirement age, we no longer look at wages. But even if you were under full retirement age, those benefits from the lottery or from the casino are not wages. And so it would not affect your benefit.
Oh, well, that's great. I just kind of wondered.
So you can get on the bus and go to the casino or gambling establishment of your choice and not worry if the good Lord gives you luck. Okay.
Okay, David. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sarah Waddle. If people want more information about AARP, how do they get a hold of y'all?
Yeah, definitely. You can visit our website for the Indiana State Office at aarp.org/in. I also encourage you to visit www.earnedasay.org if you have a desire to contact your elected officials and let them know the importance of Social Security and Medicare and not to cut these programs in a last-minute budget deal. Make your voice heard.
And if you go to www.ssa.gov, that's www.ssa.gov, you can, see what your benefits would be, how much you paid into the system since you started work. It goes all the way back to high school. As long as they got a track on you, it'll come up there, as well as apply for benefits and get a whole lot of information. Or the toll-free number, Charo Boyd, is
1-800-772-1213. Just know that we are still, again, in the community. So you can come in the office, but make sure you have an appointment. Call in that 800 number and have that appointment before you would come in.
And the Social Security offices are downtown in the Federal Building on Pennsylvania 575 or at 56th and Post Road next to the Culver's. Ice cream place right there on the corner, 56th and Post Road, or out in InTech at 71st and 465 on the west side. Charo Boyd with Social Security, Sarah Waddle with AARP. Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy New Year to both of you. Thanks very much for being with us.